WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the college football wrap-up here on 90.7, the Capstone off-season edition. We're back. It's been so long since we were back in the studio.
Yeah, I mean, about a week since we were physically in the studio.
Well, for the show.
The show's been out for a couple weeks now. You know, obviously, the Super Bowl, kind of a bigger deal than off-season college football, to say the least.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, for real, even in this part of the country. So, yeah, I mean, you know, happy to be back. I mean, you know, to be honest, football's still being played right now.
That's true.
So, you know, but happy to be here, talk some college football and a lot of stuff to get into.
Yeah, a bit of a smaller show today. Adam's not with us today, so it's just me, Nicholas, and Joe. Sorry, Adam's not here.
Yeah.
Speaking of football still being played, did you see this massive comeback in the XFL? AJ McCarron. Absolutely wild.
Yeah, had the I was watching a little bit of the Alabama women's basketball game going on. Glanced over to my phone, which I had the XFL game on, and realized that game was, I mean, it was 3.5 quarters of boring and a half of a quarter of some of the greatest offense I've ever seen. So, crazy game. I mean, AJ McCarron turned it around somehow, and good for him and good for St. Louis, I guess.
Yeah, so if you missed it at the end, I'll kind of do a quick recap. San Antonio led St. Louis Battle Hawks 15-3 with a minute 25 to go. St. Louis scores a touchdown. They go for the 3-point conversion, which is from the 10-yard line.
Yes.
I think.
10 or 15.
Yeah, the 10 or 15. They get that. It's 15-12. So then in the XFL, instead of going for the onside kick, you have the option to try a 4th and 15 from your own 20?
25.
Your own 20 or 25. They convert that. They score a touchdown to win the game 18-15. I don't know about you, but I really, really love like some of the changes that they're doing in the XFL with the kickoffs, where everybody has to stand still until the ball is fielded. And the 4th and 15 is just an awesome option.
I think the 4th and 15 should actually become, I mean, like the other stuff that I like in the XFL, I'm like, you know, could give or take whether it's in the NFL or not, but that 4th and 15 I think has to be implemented. I mean, there's no, like, the onside kick rarely ever works, you know, so the like a 4th and 15, yeah, you might not convert it most of the time. I believe even Saturday night they had a 4th and 15 opportunity that didn't work. I think it was like Vegas or somebody tried it and it failed. So it's not going to work every time, but it's way more interesting than any onside kick where, you know, you pretty much know your team's either going to, you know, your team, if they're kicking, it's not going to get it. So
yeah, I like the odds of it. I feel like it's pretty balanced, and you know, they said that the NFL is testing rules in the XFL, so I hope that we see that. But I'd like to see it in college football too, honestly. I think maybe the odds in college football of converting an onside kick are a bit higher. I'd be curious to see what it is, but
yeah,
you know, just an idea. If you're interested in the XFL, we do have a podcast, The 3-Point Conversion. They just filmed their first episode, last week, with Adam and Carson. First episode's out now.
Yeah.
So check that out at our WVUAFM website.
Yeah, a couple of big Alabama guys in there. Obviously, you mentioned McCarron. You know, I mean, it's a really fun league, I think, to watch. And I hope, to be honest, it succeeds. I mean, I know, you know, the USFL is coming too, but I hope they either merge or one of them succeeds, because I think it's fun. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't think more football is a bad thing.
No, I don't think it can ever be a bad thing, especially in St. Louis and San Antonio, where they sell out games.
Also, I don't know if you've seen the Sea Dragons like helmets. Those are so sick.
I have seen them. I'm a DC Defenders fan.
Okay.
So I was doing a little preview, realized that Josh Gordon is on the Sea Dragons.
Yeah,
I didn't know that guy was in even playing football, but yeah, the uniforms are very cool. I mean, yeah, the Seattle Sea Dragons helmets are very cool. I think St. Louis's like home uniforms are really cool, the blue and gray. You know, so I've been watching a lot of it, but I feel like we've talked a lot about the XFL.
Yeah. So let's get into some college football. Obviously, you know, we missed a couple weeks there, not our fault. But huge hires for Alabama, the first of which was Tommy Rees from Notre Dame. You know, just kind of recap what we're looking at here. Tommy Rees, 30 years old, a pretty young hire for Nick Saban. You know, not a huge coaching history. He was a graduate assistant at Northwestern, offensive assistant with the Chargers, and then the QB's coach for Notre Dame, and then offensive coordinator and QB coach for 2 years there, and then obviously gets hired at Alabama. You know, I'm curious as to what you think about this hire. You know, maybe not the splash that everybody was looking for, perhaps, but, you know, something different.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, like, it's interesting because, like you said, Tommy Rees is 30-something years old. He's 30 years old, young guy. And, yeah, it's not that splash hire, to be honest. I didn't even expect Tommy Rees to leave Notre Dame, and he went there. You know, he was an alumni of Notre Dame. But I think it's a really intriguing hire because if you look at Notre Dame last season with Tommy Rees as their offensive coordinator, now, mind you, it was not necessarily a good year for Notre Dame for their standards, but when you realize that he's dealing with a backup quarterback, you know, and Drew Pine, who's now out of the program, and you know, I believe a couple of occurrences he had to go down to a third stringer every once in a while. You know, it's impressive when you look at how Notre Dame grew over the last season. I mean, they started out, you know, 10 points against Ohio State, 21 in a loss to Marshall. But then by the end of the year, I mean, they're putting up 44 against, you know, or 41, excuse me, against Syracuse, 44 against, or 35 against Clemson, you know, 35 against Navy, you know, whatever that means, 44 against Boston College, and 27 against USC, and that game was a respectable, maybe 11-point loss on the road for the Irish. So while it's not maybe the splash hire that everyone was looking for, I think it is one of those hires where I think it at least boosts the offense a little bit. I mean, we've complained a lot about Bill O'Brien and his play calling and, you know, his running scheme and all that, and you know, Tommy Rees runs the ball. You know, in Notre Dame, you kind of have to run the ball. He runs the ball. He uses tight ends. I'm fascinated to see what he can do with Alabama's talent, because I think Alabama's talent is a step up from probably everybody, but especially Notre Dame and last year's Notre Dame. So, yeah, I mean, I'll swing it back over to you. I mean, those are just my general thoughts, but, yeah, kind of, interested to see what happens here.
Yeah, you know what? When I first heard about this hire, I was a little disappointed because, you know, obviously there were so many there was a lot of names out there that I feel like could have been big hitters. But, you know, the more I look at this one, the more I like it. You know, it makes sense for the situation that Alabama's in. So let's look at what Tommy Rees does good. You know, he is a big proponent of running the ball, and that's, you know, Nick Saban has said that he wants to, or, you know, maybe not said, but it's pretty clear that he wants to get back to running the football, you know, having a great defense that's going to get you some turnovers and just being consistent on offense, right? And that's something that Tommy Rees has been able to do. You know, he was able to adapt to multiple quarterback strengths over the course of this last season at Notre Dame. You know, obviously you mentioned the injury at the beginning of the year. And I think this next season for Alabama, that's going to be a big thing, because I don't know that Alabama will have the same starting quarterback week one as they do at the end of the season.
Yeah,
I think we're looking at a very flexible quarterback situation. You know, maybe we're not talking about that later on in the season, but I think right now, you know, definitely not knowing who is the number one headed into next year or next season, that's another good thing. What else does Tommy Rees do good? He's really good about using his personnel and really, like, making sure that they're going to have an impact on the game, you know, whether that's, you know, a star running back, a tight end, you know, making sure that they're touching the ball in some way. And I think that that's something that we didn't really have this past year. You know, maybe Alabama had a lack of talent from prior years, especially at the receiver position. But, you know, I think this is a decent hire. You know, they had a lot of pretty decent wins and good results, especially on the offensive end. I mean, they beat South Carolina at the end of the year in their bowl game, and South Carolina was cooking.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned they put up 27 against USC, you know, pretty decently close game. You know, they beat Clemson. I mean, I don't know how much of a win that really is, but
I think if you beat them like that, that's a pretty good
win.
They
beat BYU.
You
know,
yeah.
I think Notre Dame got a lot better from where they started.
Yes.
At the beginning of the year to the end. And so just the improvement. And I mean, Tommy Rees is super young. So he has like a ton of time to develop, and he has been really commended for his play calling, which I think is definitely a welcome change from Bill O'Brien.
Yeah. And I mean, this is not, you know, like when we're talking about them running the ball and using tight ends, like it's not even like a boring offense. I mean, Notre Dame last season averaged almost 400 yards a game on offense. And, you know, when you look at how they're doing it, it's really impressive the fact that they can average that. And, you know, I think that, you know, Tommy Rees coming into the program, you know, even at a base level, it's just a new set of eyes and ears and new ideas. And, you know, I think people kind of got bored of watching Bill O'Brien. That was a lot of it. I mean, yeah, his play calling people might have not liked his play calling or his schemes or how he's using people, but it also, it got pretty basic towards the end. I think that's the one thing that Tommy Rees and Notre Dame, they were never really like a basic offense, even if they were maybe like a fundamental running and pound the rock team. It wasn't a basic scheme, and they got a lot of people involved. And I think you brought up a good point there with the quarterbacks for Alabama. Like, we really have no idea who's going to play. And to be honest, like you said, we, you know, come week one against Middle Tennessee State, we still might not know who's going to be the starter for the majority of the season. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm maybe more excited, like you kind of what you alluded to. I'm more excited today than maybe the day he got hired, but I think it's a solid hire for Alabama for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just like it the more and more I think about it. So I'll ask this. Do we think that this is a long-term replacement? Or, you know, with him being so young, do we see this as a kind of stepping off point? Like, if he comes to Alabama, they're super innovative, which I will also say, all season long on this show, I've been preaching and asking for more creativity in the offense. So, like, from a creativity standpoint, this is exactly the hire that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's good. But do we see this as a long-term replacement? Or do you think Alabama's trend of offensive coordinators getting better jobs just continues?
I mean, I could see it lasting maybe longer than the past few offensive coordinators. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a long-term hire, because I do think that if a guy like Tommy Rees, if he succeeds at Alabama and a big team, whether that's college or NFL, offers him a job, I think he has, you know, you kind of have to take it. And that's just kind of the nature of the job at Alabama nowadays. I mean, it's incredible when you look at the past few offensive coordinators. I mean, you know, it's NFL coaches, college coaches, you know, nowadays they're now NFL or college coaches or coordinators. So I think it's just, you know, I think it's a really, I don't know, I it might last longer than 2 years with the, you know, with the likes of Bill O'Brien or Steve Sarkisian, but I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, it's maybe like a 5-season thing with Rees, just him wanting to get some experience under his belt. I mean, you know, quite frankly, coaching with Nick Saban on the Nick Saban staff can give you a lot of good opportunities in football. So, I wouldn't be shocked if it's maybe a longer term hire, but not super long. I don't know. That might not really answer the question well, but that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of share your same point. I mean, like, if you're Tommy Rees, you hit the gold mine. I mean, this is the best job that you can have in college football as far as like future mobility. I mean, look at offensive coordinators: Bill O'Brien, obviously, Lane Kiffin, Sark, Brian Daboll.
Like, if you look at guys like Mike Locksley, who was like a quarterback's coach, he's now the head coach at Maryland. I mean, it's like an entire coaching room will get opportunities somehow.
Yeah, the coaching tree, the Nick Saban coaching tree is unreal.
It's
might not be matched maybe at all in sports.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
the only comparison I can even draw is maybe like Greg Popovich in the NBA. with his coaching tree, but yeah. that's like maybe it.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
I think it's a great opportunity for Tommy Rees. And I could definitely see, like you said, you know, this being a 4-5 season kind of thing, which I think would be welcome. You know, we've gone, I mean, what is it? No offensive coordinator has stayed more than a couple seasons in the last couple of years. So,
yeah, I mean,
you know, it's just, I feel like some consistency would be nice to see.
Yes. And just like establishing an identity, to be honest. I mean, I feel like these past couple Alabama teams haven't really had that per se. I mean, it's been, their identity is Bryce Young. Like, that's the identity of the offense. And I think the one thing that Rees is really good at, and when he was good at with Notre Dame, even if he was only there a couple years, is the fact that he's you know what you're getting, and you know what kind of offense you can run with him, and it's an identity and it's a scheme that works. So yeah.
So final question, let's rate this hire 1 to 10.
Oh boy.
How do you feel about Tommy Rees being the new offensive coordinator at Alabama?
I think right now I'd probably give it like a 7 out of 10 for right now. Just because, I mean, we haven't seen any scheme, anything with him. And, I mean, I don't even know if we're going to get that with the spring game in a couple months. But I'd give it a 7 now. I mean, I think it's definitely an improvement over O'Brien. But I don't. I think just the question is, can he do it in the SEC? That's the question for me. But I give it a 7 out of 10 just because it is an improvement. It is a step up. And he's, like we said, I mean, if he's here for 5 years, it's a good hire. So,
yeah, definitely not having the SEC experience is a big hit on him,
yeah.
I guess you would say, you know. But he is pretty young, hasn't had the time.
It's interesting, too, the one thing, you know, that Notre Dame has actually been pretty good at, even if their season wasn't great, was they got a lot of good recruits to go there. Like, mm-hmm. They had a pretty good recruiting class, considering that Brian Kelly left the school. So, I mean, I think if you can recruit for, I think they even got a 5-star or 2 to go to Notre Dame. Like, if you can get that kind of pull at Notre Dame, Alabama should thrive recruiting-wise with him. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that aspect, but, yeah.
For sure. You know, I'll go a step further. I'll say it's an 8 just because I think for me, for most likely every Alabama fan out there, anything but Bill O'Brien is an upgrade.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to see more creativity in the offense, you know, like find ways to use all these athletes that Alabama's recruiting. I mean, Nick Saban just got another number one recruiting class. Shocker.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's find ways to use those weapons. Let's not be so predictable on offense. You know, I agree with, like, yes, let's get back to running the ball, have a consistent run game, because that can win you a lot of games. Consistent run game and a great defense will win you a lot of games, as evidenced by a majority of Alabama's history under Nick Saban. But, you know, I just want to see some creativity, and I think that this is a good hire for that.
Yes, oh, definitely.
Yeah, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the other side of the ball, the defensive coordinator, Kevin Steele. We'll be right back here on 90.7 Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in here on 90.7 Capstone to the College Football Wrap-Up Show. It's Nick and Joe talking some more off-season college football moves. And we're talking about Kevin Steele, the new defensive coordinator for Alabama.
Yeah, I was just
Do not look at his Wikipedia page, Alabama fans. You will be shocked. We're going to talk about it.
His head coaching record was rough. I'm kind of remiss, Nick, you didn't mention our XFL chat earlier.
Oh, that is true.
DC now down 9-0. Greg Williams, former Jets defensive coordinator on DC, kind of interesting. His defense is terrible. So
hey, but you know what? I don't know if DC can beat. They are playing DC, right?
Yes.
I don't know if DC can beat the legendary Ben DiNucci at quarterback.
That's true. Hard to beat that. But yeah, I don't know.
All time.
It's 9-0 though. Still one possession game.
That is true.
But anyway, back to back to Kevin Steele and his awful Wikipedia page.
Oh, don't look it up, folks. It's bad.
Like, if you want him to work, don't look it up.
Don't look it up.
If you have a positive outlook on the hire, don't look up his head coaching career at all.
So speaking of his career, let's get the facts out there about Kevin Steele. He is literally the polar opposite of the Tommy Rees hire.
Yes.
64 years old, has NFL, college, SEC experience.
Alabama
experience. Ton of time with Nick Saban. Let's kind of go down his coaching career. He was at Tennessee as a grad assistant, New Mexico State, Oklahoma State, Tennessee, Nebraska, little stint with the Panthers.
Little stint with Baylor.
We're going to get into the Baylor discussion. He was with Alabama as a defensive coordinator in 2007. Clemson, a little bit of Clemson experience, back with Alabama in 2013, 2014, LSU, Auburn as a defensive coordinator, then he was the interim head coach there in 2020, interim head coach at Tennessee in 2021, and then most recently the defensive coordinator for Miami in 2022. I'll lead with this. His head coaching record, just be glad that A, Kevin Steele is not your head coach, and that B, he is not calling offensive plays because he is 9-37 as a head coach.
We were talking about this a little in the break. I mean, he is involved in what ESPN called one of the top 10 worst coaching decisions, I'm assuming of all time, in the 99 season when he was up by I think one possession against UNLV, as you know, he was Baylor's head coach, ran the ball instead of just kneeling the ball. They fumbled, UNLV scooped and scored, and the Rebels won the game.
A truly tough scene.
He's 1-31 in the Big 12 as a head coach, but we won't discuss that too much because defensive coordinator wise, he's actually been all right.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. Here's how the last paragraph of his head coaching career starts. It says, Steele's fourth season, this is with Baylor, 2002, had a terrible beginning.
Yep.
Can't be good. Apparently, they lost to Cal 70-22.
Yeah, a 1-10 Cal, or so the previous season.
1-10 the previous season.
They were 1-10, put up 70 points.
Yeah, and then they lost 62-11 to Tech, but just not a good head coach. But, you know, maybe he could be a good defensive coordinator. We'll kind of get into that. He was a Broyles Award finalist, which would be top assistant in the nation this past year with Miami. So, you know, we've kind of just gone on here about all the bad things about Kevin Steele.
There's a couple.
But how do you feel about this hire? What was your initial reaction?
To be honest, I'm actually, despite all of the stuff we just said about him, I was more excited about this hire than I was the Tommy Rees hire because of the fact that if you look at his career, you know, a lot of the times post-Baylor, you know, a PB Kevin Steele was pretty, you know, a lot of that group was pretty good. I mean, he was Alabama's first ever defensive coordinator under Nick Saban, I should say, not ever, in 2007. Then he was kind of a linebackers coach in 08, was at Clemson. I think he had a couple of really good defenses with Auburn in that mid to late, I guess, 2010s. I think it was 2016 to 2020. You know, 2015 LSU's defense was pretty good, I think that if you were to just judge him off of what he did with Miami last season, it's a little unfair to him because I think he's kind of shown that when he has had certain level of talent, he's been a really good defensive coordinator, and you know, he knows Alabama. I think the biggest thing is he knows the SEC. To be fair, I guess he knows half the country with his coaching career, but he knows the SEC pretty well. He can recruit a guy. I have a feeling that whatever Pete Golding let the defense get away with during practices, Kevin Steele will not. So I think that, you know, if we see one bad Alabama defensive game, or even one game that isn't maybe great, defensively, the defense, I think, will become infinitely better.
Yeah, we're running the bleachers the next
day. We're running the bleachers. You might see them on campus doing Marine-type drills, running around the quad. So
yeah, true old-school approach.
Yeah,
perhaps.
And I think, to an extent, I think that's good, especially nowadays, because I think if you can mix a lot of his, like, a lot of the defensive coaching will be younger than him and a little new school. So if you add Kevin Steele into that mix, I think it could be really good. Pardon the pun, but I think he'll add like a steel kind of curtain to the defense, which is something greatly needed.
I like that. So. Once again, just kind of like with Tommy Rees, it's not exciting hires, but I think this is what Alabama really needed. I think you needed a guy on defense who was, you know, kind of the last era of Nick Saban teams to kind of get back to what they were
someone who at least knows what that success was like defensively.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the schemes might be different. Obviously, like today's defense, like a really good college defense might let up like 21, 28 points a game. And that's considered like one of the top ends, which wasn't the case when Steele was there. But just somebody who knows the approach of it, I think is crucial. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, you don't have to necessarily. I think the biggest thing about a modern college defense is you just have to be able to give your team a better chance to win. You know, you can't, like, against that Tennessee game, you know, you can't let up 50 points. I mean, if you even you get one more stop than you did. Yeah. Alabama wins that game, and we might be talking about a national championship right now. So, that's the thing for me. I like this hire, honestly. It's kind of interesting. Bama Central, on their report when he was first hired, Steele had 4 years of working for Saban at Alabama in two separate stints. Then he had 5 years at Auburn. So if he was to stay with Alabama for two more years, he would be fully vested in the state's retirement system. So then he would get, like, I'm assuming
really?
A pension. So maybe we've got some working of the game. You know,
so he's going to try to stay for 2 years.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Wow. I didn't even know that. That's
kind
of funny.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I was just kind of scrolling, and I found that. I think that's pretty funny. I can't remember. Who was the one hire was the Chick-fil-A bag that everybody was
Jeremy
talking
Pruitt.
About. Yes. I remember when this first came out, people were saying, like, maybe this is kind of a placeholder for, you know, an eventual, like, for Pruitt coming eventually, you know, while they kind of work that out with, you know, the NCAA, the SEC, everyone who all that has to go through. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not, you know, this isn't like the home run hire, I don't think. And it's definitely, when you look at, you know, his history, you're maybe a little concerned. Like I said, do not look at the Wikipedia page, Alabama fans. You will be scarred for life. And if, let's just say that the defense isn't good next year, I mean, people are going to immediately start calling to that. I can already see it now. I can see the fogs on Twitter.
One of the big reasons why Kevin Steele was hired, you know, to be brutally honest, was the fact that you didn't know what Jeremy Pruitt was going to, what his time was going to be. I mean, he's still under investigation with the NCAA. He might even have to, like, if Alabama hired him, he might not have even been able to work, you know, for like a year. So I think not rushing the gun, and you know, like, Saban knows the guy. He knows. I have a feeling that, like, if you're going to hire a coordinator who might have a bit of a questionable kind of success rate, if you get a guy that at least Nick Saban knows, he'll talk to him, he'll listen, you know, like, it might be a very intense locker room for those players. I almost feel bad, but I think for Kevin Steele right now, I mean, it's just, I mean, kind of, to be honest, I was getting to a point kind of what you said the last segment with Tommy Rees. I mean, as an Alabama fan, it's just happy it's not Golding.
Yeah,
to be honest, I mean, that's the move, and I think Kevin Steele will bring a little bit of toughness that's sorely needed. So
yeah, definitely needed. You know, maybe hopefully he will not you know, if Alabama would be so lucky to have another, you know, generational type player like Will Anderson, he wouldn't have him dropping back in coverage like he's Micah Parsons.
Yeah, no. If Kevin Steele was working with Dallas Turner and Will Anderson, I'm hoping he could do a little bit better than 52 against Tennessee.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, when you have a generational generational defensive talent, just like on offense, when you have Bryce Young, like maybe the greatest quarterback to ever play at Alabama, you know, and you come away from the season how it went, you know, I think anything would be an improvement.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yes.
I do too. The way that I look at it. So, we'll kind of close this one out. How would you rate this hire, 1 to 10?
I'll go an 8 out of 10 for this one. I'm a little more excited about this one than I am Tommy Reese, although looking over the Wikipedia is a little, you know, skewed. But I think 8 out of 10 for this one. I mean, he knows the SEC. He, you know, I'm assuming he's going to be able to recruit really well in the South. Saban knows him. He knows defense. I'll give it an 8.
Yeah, I'll go with like a 6. You know, I think that this is it's a decent hire. You know, not the splash that everyone was looking for. I think everybody was like, oh, Jeremy Pruitt. But given the circumstances, I think, honestly, if you ask me, this is a placeholder hire, especially when I found out that, you know, he's only 2 years from getting that stipend or that what do you even call it? Is it a stipend?
It's a pension.
A pension, yes. That's what I'm looking for. So, you know, I think it's a decent placeholder hire. I think, you know, he'll bring some of that old Alabama attitude back to the locker room, which is desperately, desperately needed. And hopefully he'll be able to take advantage of the talent that Nick Saban is bringing to Alabama once again with that number one class. But, you know, I don't really see this as more than a placeholder, if I'm being completely honest.
I mean, I could very well see that where, you know, in 3 years, Jeremy Pruitt's right back on the sidelines. I don't know. I don't know if Kevin Steele is, like, the placeholder type of coordinator, but I don't know. You bring up, you know, a lot of good points there. You know, he is just a couple of years away from retirement. He is 64, so who knows, but...
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to me, like, how different these hires are, like, with Tommy Reese and Kevin Steele. Like, I mean
the
coaches'
meetings are going to be almost
polar opposites. Yeah. I mean, I wish we could have a live stream of what was going on in there. We should have had a live stream, like, after that Tennessee game with, I want to know what Nick Saban said to Pete Golding after that game. God. I can only imagine the things that were said in that locker room.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that... I couldn't imagine either, and which is why, and the thing too is that I think, like, a guy like Kevin Steele could probably take that, like, if his defense doesn't have a good game. Now, to be honest, if he's letting him 52 points again, a little cause for concern. But if Alabama does have that type of game, I feel like Kevin Steele, I would bet on him to make an improvement more than I would for Pete Golding. So I think that might be another reason why I think Saban hired him, because he almost knows he can yell at him.
And I think another nice thing is that you're not starting from scratch on both sides, right? Like, you have someone in Kevin Steele who was with Nick Saban for quite a while, you know, has the SEC experience. So that's not as much of a gamble as Tommy Reese might be.
Yeah. You know. No, and I just think when you look at, you know, Pete Golding, and I don't want to really bash the guy too much, but I mean, if you look, he came from, I believe it was UTEP or UTSA, one of the Texas schools. There was a little bit of questions, and I think that it maybe wasn't the best decision, but I think to get a guy like Kevin Steele who has a lot of Power 5 experience, I mean, he's pretty much spent his whole coaching career in the Power 5 and at big time schools. You know, so I mean, I think just bringing in a guy who knows that is also very crucial for Alabama, knows the type of player you're dealing with, the type of guy you're dealing with. So,
yeah, so Pete Golding was formerly at UTSA before he came to Alabama.
Well, the road kept running for him, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously he's now at Ole Miss, so we're going to see, you know, were we really missing something? Was he getting carried by the defensive talent?
Yeah, we'll have to see that.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
I don't know.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, we're going to try something new. We got a little grab bag of topics. We'll be right back here on 90.7 Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back in, folks, here on 90.7 The Capstone to the College Football Wrap-Up Show, off-season edition. You know, we're trying something new here at the end, a little grab bag of topics. You know, don't have as much to talk about here in the off-season. Yes. It's Nick and Joe. Adam missing today, but hopefully we'll be back next week. So let's just kind of go about it. First off, completely away from college football, we got to talk about Mack McClung, the epic performance in the dunk contest.
Yeah, I mean, kind of a remarkable, I think it was one of the best dunk contests in recent memory. I mean, you know, Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon kind of put on a show about 6-7 years ago. But Mack McClung, I mean, he was great. I mean, to be fair, all of the people in it were pretty good. I mean, it was never like boring to watch. But Mack McClung tapping it, what did he tap it off the backboard and then dunked it something else?
You know, I three when I first saw that dunk, I was like, okay, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
And then I saw that, well, because that was the first dunk that he did, right? Where he had the guy who had another guy on his shoulders holding the ball. When I first saw the dunk, I was like, oh, okay, he just jumped over him and, like, reversed it, right? Mm-hmm. But then I saw he tapped it against the backboard, and I was like,
yeah,
man.
It was crazy. And, I mean, I thought, to be honest, this All-Star weekend, I mean, it's not even over. I think the All-Star game's going on right now, but like the three-point contest and the dunk contest were actually really enjoyable to watch. Even though, you know, my guy Kevin Werder, I was kind of rooting for as, you know, fellow redhead guy from Maryland.
Kind of stunk it up out there.
Kind of was awful.
It was unfortunate.
Pressure, I think, got to him, but you know, his Kings are doing good, I guess.
Yeah, that's the upside. Yeah, I loved – yeah, Mack McClung was awesome. You know, they have to get a G League guy, which, I mean, okay, Mack McClung was known in high school for being a great dunker, so I think this is a fair
– yeah, and, like, he's actually – like, his college career, he was really good at – pretty much just dunking. I mean, he wasn't very good in college per se, but you know, it seems like he's worked insanely hard to get better in the G League. So I think just getting him in there, and to be honest, the NBA probably should try this more often. Not necessarily going to the G League, but just like, if you know a guy can dunk, you put him in the dunk contest.
Yeah, well, because the problem for so many years is that they haven't been able to get who they wanted at the dunk contest. LeBron has never done a dunk contest. Zion hasn't done one since he came in the league. No. I was really surprised. Like, I know he got hurt, but obviously you feel like you would have loved to see him, like, his rookie year when he was, like, the hottest thing on the market.
Yes.
Ja's never done a dunk contest. That's tough. But I think Zion is going to do the dunk contest next year. I think he said he will. And obviously we're going to have Mack McClung return because they were immediate to ask him if he would do it again the next year. You know.
So.
But, it, you know, when we say coming from the G League, let's not act like Mack McClung was like some random guy. This guy was the MVP of the G League.
No.
So, like, this guy can ball.
He's hyped up. I mean, he's been very – like, if you've watched and surrounded yourself with basketball, you know Mack McClung.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think Mack McClung winning the dunk contest, to me, just solidifies the point that even a quote-unquote bad NBA player is infinitely better than any average person at basketball.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
like that. I think it was Brian Scalabrine, who's role player for the Celtics, said, "I'm closer to LeBron than you are to me." You know, talking to a reporter and to the people. I mean, and that's never been truer than when I saw a guy who the NBA, like a lot of NBA teams, didn't really want him. He's in the G League, and he's dunking over two people with a ball, like just or you know, dunking over a guy with a ball, and just it was remarkable. I was like, yeah, okay, he's. Yeah, we're all trash.
He might have saved the dunk contest.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe. I hope so. I hope we get a better dunk contest next year because of what Mack McClung did this year.
I hope it's just more entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. But hats off to Mack McClung. Yes. Great performance. Next up we got... so apparently the leading idea for the new SEC format, obviously Texas and Oklahoma going to join a year early in 2024.
Yes. 2024.
you know, I think that's great news, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, as a guy who's going to be a senior next year, not great news. going to kind of miss out on that, but, you know, it's cool, I guess.
Oh, well, we will get Texas, so you'll at least get Texas. To see them
we'll
play
get half
Texas.
Of them, yeah.
So, you know, better than nothing, but... the leading idea for the format is that they're going to play 9 conference games. I believe they play 8 now.
Yes.
But they would play 6 rotating opponents, and then every team would have 3 set opponents.
Yeah.
So on that note, who would you want Alabama's 3 set opponents to be?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the two obvious ones I think you have to keep would be Auburn and Tennessee. 100%. I think Alabama has to play Auburn and Tennessee every single year until... you know, the world explodes. I don't know when, you know, the end of time. Now the third team is interesting because I think there's a couple teams that I think, especially if you pencil them in right now, would be very interesting teams to play. So obviously, Alabama, Texas would be fun. You know, they played last season. It was a great game. They're going to play this season.
And that game had massive viewership
that
on Fox
game,
this year.
I mean, I think for a TV company, Alabama, Texas, you can't get a better viewership number than that.
That's fair.
Maybe unless that game is the national championship. Oklahoma, I think, would be a fun team to watch. Obviously, if you want to go a little more like rooted in the SEC historic, LSU, not a bad team to have that third team. But I'm going to go for a little bit of an out there, I guess. Not many people are saying it, and I don't know how it would necessarily work. But I think Alabama should play Florida. I think there are 3 teams would be Auburn, Tennessee, Florida. Alabama, for those who maybe don't know, Alabama and Florida have a lot of history. Not so much recent stuff, but when Nick Saban first got hired, his biggest challenge was overcoming Florida. Played a couple times in the SEC championship game. Obviously, the infamous video of Tim Tebow crying and then cutting to Mark Ingram doing the gator chop on the Alabama sidelines. So I think, and obviously we saw them play 2 years ago, or 2 seasons ago, I should say, right, in Gainesville. Pretty good game, even if it maybe shouldn't have been for Alabama. But I think you know, revive that Alabama-Florida kind of hatred. I would like Texas and Oklahoma to play Alabama every year, but I think Florida would be just way cool to see.
Yeah, I like that. That could be fun. And you know what I'm curious of, mm-hmm, is like, who's deciding these set opponents? So like, I mean, obviously Alabama and Auburn is like locked in. Like, yeah, there's no way that goes anywhere. Yes. You know that Texas is going to play Texas A&M, despite
Texas
how much they might not want to do that.
Texas will always play A&M and probably Oklahoma.
Oh, definitely. Always going to play Oklahoma.
I would imagine you'd get all the state rivals.
Oh, 100%.
So like Ole Miss, Mississippi State, technically Vanderbilt, Tennessee. I would imagine you would keep that Florida-Georgia game. But the interesting thing is, because a lot of teams, I think, in the SEC is rooted a lot in history for football, but a lot of these teams don't have like a natural maybe third team. You know, like Alabama is maybe a rare team in which you can point out and say they could go LSU, they could go Florida, they could even go Texas, and it would all make sense. But like a school like, you know, like a South Carolina, you know, it's like they're probably going to play Georgia every year. They might play Florida every year, but it's like then after that, it's like you might get like an intriguing, you know, if Shane Beamer keeps it up, like you know, is South Carolina playing Oklahoma or Tennessee or Texas, excuse me, or you know, I think it. The scheduling creates a lot of interesting possibilities as far as, and obviously, I mean, you're going to be playing every team every other year. Like, you know, throughout 4 years, you're going to watch every, you know, like Alabama's going to play every team in the new SEC, you know, at least twice.
Yeah.
I believe, you know, and some teams are going to play every year. So it's not like it's that maybe big of a deal, but I think it's kind of cool that, you know, they've kind of opened it up. If there are going to be maybe no divisions, and it's just kind of going to be one big conference that, you know, get as many, I think if you can, get as many former East, SEC East and former SEC West teams who hadn't really played each other to play each other. I mean, I read somewhere, I think Georgia has never played Texas A&M in the SEC.
Really?
They've only done it once, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just... like, that just can't happen, so.
Yeah, I agree. You know, okay.
So after that, yeah, who do you have?
So for my three opponents, obviously, I agree with you. Alabama has to play Auburn. They have to play Tennessee.
Yeah.
The third one's super interesting. Like you said, I like Texas. I think that's probably I think that's probably what it ends up being. Honestly, I could see that one over everything
There's
else.
There's a lot of TV pull in that game. Even like in Oklahoma would have a lot of TV pull.
Yeah, and I think that Alabama fans would be happy if it was Texas because I feel like that's, you know, are they ever going to truly be back?
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think so. Maybe. Famous last words. But, you know, I want to go a little bit of recency bias, but I would like to see A&M. Honestly, okay. I feel like that's kind of a brewing little rivalry. The last couple of games have been pretty good.
Yeah. And
Kyle Field is a fantastic place to play football. It's like the place is different.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just a fun little rivalry. It's always fun to poke fun at Aggies.
Yeah, so. And I mean, you know, A&M Alabama, obviously, I mean, before Jimbo got there, it might have been a little desolate, but if you go back, you know, Johnny Manziel beat him in Tuscaloosa, which there's like 10 quarterbacks that have done that. Like, I don't know, you know, it's like remarkable. So it's like, you know, I think that's an intriguing one too. And I guess it does kind of depend on some of these other teams and these other rivalries. You know, like I said, like Texas and Texas A&M are probably going to have to play. You know, Texas A&M probably has to play Arkansas because they've been playing Arkansas the past couple seasons in Jerry World. But I think Alabama would fit right in. I am interested to see, though, if they go more – and I wouldn't like this at all, but if they go more competitive balance focused. So, like, in Alabama, playing Auburn and Tennessee – and then it's like, okay, their third team's like Vanderbilt.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was saying. I was like, you know, I wonder who's deciding this, like who's making the calls, or, you know, is like that last spot, you know, maybe it's random. That would be horrible. But, you know, who's making that call at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Because, you want your schedule to not be too difficult.
No, like you don't. I mean, listen, like, and this is going to be a really big case. Not that we really want to talk about them a ton, but like Auburn. I mean, Auburn's two locked-in games are Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, who do you give them? You know, like, because imagine Auburn somehow gets, you know, oh, okay, their three fixed opponents are Alabama, Georgia, and, you know, Oklahoma. Or Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee every year.
See, the Oklahoma one I could see happening, and that would be awful.
And that, I mean, that's essentially, well, at least right now, probably three losses for Auburn on paper.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, like, you can't, like, they might not want to do that. You know, and that's kind of what I'm wary of is for TV. I mean, Alabama playing Auburn, Texas, Auburn, Tennessee, Texas would be great.
And I also wonder, like, how long do these set opponents stay in place?
Yeah, they're
like,
not forever.
Would we have, like, a, you know, we might have to have some competitive balancing going on at some point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, and listen, this might sound like a joke, but, like Vanderbilt's three fixed opponents might be, like, Missouri, Kentucky, and South Carolina. Or Tennessee, sorry. Or, yeah, you know, so they, Vanderbilt might get Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee as their fixed opponents. If Missouri somehow becomes, like, a national contending team, like, you're not going to have them play Missouri and Kentucky every year.
Yeah.
You know, assuming, you know, those teams stay. You know, although I guess, like, world in which Missouri's contending, maybe Kentucky is too. But, you know, I mean, that's
the world
just
might be ending.
I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing. Or, like, a school like Kentucky, for example, you know, I think they're going to play Tennessee. They might play Florida because they have some history and some other team. But then, you know, if Kentucky becomes really good, then maybe their next fixed opponent's Alabama or Georgia or somebody else. So, I mean, that's kind of the interesting. I don't know the exact date as far or how long each of these teams or each of these fixed opponents last, but I know that they're not, you know, indefinite. This is here you're going to play until we say you don't type of deal. You know, it's fluid. It's going to change. And I would imagine, you know, ESPN signing the SEC to like a $800 million TV deal is going to have a lot to say. So.
Yeah. Yeah. They might have the true vote.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think ESPN might have more of a say than a lot of the schools will.
Yeah, then Alabama's definitely getting
a Texas or Oklahoma.
Texas, Texas, Auburn, Tennessee every year, and then fans will cry about how it's not fair for years.
Yeah, but it's crazy because like Alabama still might only lose one game.
Yeah. So we would be complaining. We'd say unfair.
We would be awful, but yeah. I mean, that's just and that's just kind of what I'm interested about with all this stuff. You know, with the new expanding SEC conference and specifically with the SEC, just that mindset of, you know, okay, yeah, like we're gonna have, like, you know, like I said, schedule as many different teams as you can, you know, because like it's just gonna be, like, it's gonna be awkward for maybe a more traditional SEC fan to see Oklahoma with the little SEC badge and Texas with the little SEC thing on their field. So just make it best case scenario, get like Tennessee to play Texas, you know, or get, you know, the Orange Bowl is kind of taken, but, you know, get South Carolina to play Oklahoma or Georgia, Texas, or Georgia, you know, Oklahoma or something like that. And just have, you know, I kind of hope that they just kind of make it fun for a fan, which I think, if, to be honest, if it's good for TV, it's probably good for the fans schedule wise. I mean, there might not be a lot of stuff like that, but if it's good for ESPN to put on TV, then I think it's really good for us as viewers to watch it.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we'll kind of close out the show. We'll do a quick little state of the state, you know, a little state rundown. We're a couple weeks late, but we'll kind of do a quick rundown of Alabama athletics.
And we won't talk Medicare, Social Security.
Oh, yeah,
nothing
no.
like that.
This is an extremely non-political state of the state
Strictly
address.
Strictly sports.
Everybody's going to love this. Keep your politics out of my sports. Yeah, so big day for women's sports for Alabama today. Alabama softball beats number 7 Florida State.
Yep.
That's a big win. You know, on the women's basketball side, not so much of a big win.
Not very good for
Alabama
them.
Loses to Mississippi State. Final score was, let's see, I covered this game today.
It was,
and I don't
60,
know the final score.
Was it 65 to 49?
I want to say, 60 to 45.
60 to 45.
Yeah,
okay.
That's... yeah, tough, very tough loss for an Alabama women's basketball team that hadn't won on the, or hadn't lost on the road in like
in over a month.
5-6 games.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And still, I mean, they're still very good this season. I mean, they're 20-7, fourth in the SEC.
For sure.
So, I mean, very watchable.
Team is very good.
Yeah.
They
got one home game left.
That last home game against Ole Miss.
Yes.
Is going to be massive. Make sure you're there. That game is going to be huge because.
Kind of decides.
They're both in the fourth spot for the SEC, and that's a double bye in the SEC tournament on the line, which. You know, if you watched Alabama women's basketball last year, you'll know how big that was because they had a pretty decent run in the SEC tournament. But, you know, you just kind of got killed by that. You know, you have to play from the very beginning, which is tough. You know, still a lot to be decided there. You know, Alabama men's basketball, huge win over Georgia.
Yeah. Amended the football team.
I think that they were I saw some stat that said they're the only team to beat three or more in-conference opponents by 40 points since, like, Kentucky in, like, the 60s.
Really? So we beat Georgia, Vanderbilt, and who was the other team we beat by 40? Did we beat Kentucky by that much?
I think
LSU.
Oh, yeah, it was LSU. Yeah.
LSU.
Yeah, you just forget, you know, after you have so many huge wins.
Yeah,
you just
I guess. And LSU.
Forget about them.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously a decent, you know, recovery victory after that tough loss to Tennessee.
Tough
but,
loss
like,
Tennessee.
I think the big thing was that Tennessee game was a trap game.
Yeah.
And
I always felt that if you're going to play Auburn on the road and then Tennessee on the road right after, you're going to lose one of those.
Well, it's like, you know, they get ranked number one in the country. What happened the last time they were ranked number one in the country?
Yeah,
they lost it the same
Utah.
Week. 3 days later,
to
I
Utah.
Think.
Yep.
Yeah, to Utah, the year I was born.
Yeah.
You know, Tennessee had come off the last two losses. They lost at the buzzer.
The buzzer,
to stupid things. And that's got to be tough. And it's at home. The whole crowd's there. Did they storm the court?
I don't know. I
don't know if they did
that.
Or not.
I didn't see the end. But,
I mean, just a tough scene. But I think, like, you want to get those losses out of the way right now. Yeah. You don't want to have a repeat of last season where they lose to Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament.
And then five in a row,
Yeah, and then you lose to Notre Dame in the tournament. Yeah. In the actual tournament.
The good thing about the men's basketball team is they actually have an opportunity, if they are really this good, they have an opportunity to breeze into this tournament. I mean, they have, I believe, South Carolina on the road next, and then they have a couple very winnable games. They end their season with a pretty big one against A&M, who's, I think, second. But
if shockingly
they could
good.
Be, I mean, the interesting thing is they could go into that game wrapped up with the SEC, you know, first place if they win enough. So it could be, I think Alabama could be on the ropes for a very maybe intense or hot kind of stretch here to get into the tournament play.
Okay, so to cap it off on our college football show, I'm going to ask you a college basketball question.
Yeah.
What would be, so like how far does Alabama need to go for this season to not be considered a disappointment in the NCAA tournament? I've got
for
my
it to not be a disappointment. I mean, I think the
what's the floor? What should be the floor?
The floor should be like Elite Eight.
Okay.
I think if Alabama goes to the Elite Eight, at that point they're probably playing a school that is a blue blood or has some really massive pedigree in the sport. And I think if you can, you know, if you drop that game, maybe it's a cleanable. But I think the floor would have to be Elite Eight for me. Like, that's the bottom expectation that they can do. I think Final Four, I was going to say Final Four, but it's hard to say that, like, that's your goal because that's so hard to get to. But I'll go Elite Eight. What are you saying?
I'm going to say Final Four. Okay. I'm a tougher critic. I think that this is, I'm going to say, the best Alabama basketball team that has ever existed.
Yes.
Like, easily.
I think as of right now,
they have the best player in the country, Brandon Miller, who's going to be the top college player drafted. In the NBA. I hope he goes to the Spurs. Can he go to the Spurs, please?
Himself number one.
That'd
be honest.
Fantastic. Yeah, he could. I don't know about Victor Wembanyama.
Victor Wembanyama, he will have a lot of hype. He will. And he's like 7'2". But,
you know, hopefully, you know, they have the best player in the country. You know, they have a bunch of really talented freshmen. It's a deep team that has a lot of depth. They have huge wins already this year. That win against Houston is massive. And, like, a lot of the Blue Bloods kind of played themselves out this season. There's no Kentucky. There's no Duke. Kansas, probably the big bad still left. Maybe Houston. Yeah. You could probably consider Houston.
I would say yeah. But, I mean, I wouldn't – like, I don't think this Kansas team – obviously, last year they won the championship, but, like, I don't think this year's team is at maybe a level like that.
For sure.
Team,
so. Yeah, no. I completely agree. But, you know, just from a, like true, like, blue bloods perspective, like, who's still there? Like, you know, if in college football, like, if you got to play Alabama, you know, it's always going to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I think
the Final Four should easily be the goal. Well, I guess the goal should be winning the national championship.
I think that this team is easily talented enough to win the national championship.
I think they have a lot of pieces.
But I also think that they could have, like, they could have one game where it's just like a stinker and they come out and they're not ready to play.
That's my fear, is that they've had a couple of those games. Now, for the most part, and this is, I think, a difference from this year's team to last year's team, is that this year's team will have a stinker half. Like, they will play bad. Like obviously, their losses, they didn't play good. Like, Tennessee, they didn't really play good. And that loss to Oklahoma was awful. But, you know, for the most part, if they've had a bad game, they've been able to recoup and end up winning the game after, you know, a halftime adjustment or a timeout or something. Which last year's team, it just seemed like, you know, if they were down by 10 at any point in the game was over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think this year's team, I have a lot of faith in them going very far. You know, I'll probably have them going very far when I make a bracket. So
yeah, we might have to talk about our brackets on our college football show. That would be
To be fair, I mean, this college football show has a lot of non-college football talk.
That is true. It is the off season, so I think you know, we should get a pass for that.
Yes.
But you know, I think that's going to do it for us.
Yes.
another great show. We'll be back next week, same time on Sunday at 7. On 90.7 The Capstone, talking more college football.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's probably some more to talk about.
Yeah. I think there almost always is, especially in the SEC country.
You know, true FOG content, football-only guy content.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We need that.
Anyway, we'll see you next week here on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.